Translation, thereafter, the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and for each and every one of them, there was a fully equipped palace complete with necessary compounds and gardens. Full description of these palaces is given in the 10th canto. All the palaces were made of the best marble stone. They were illuminated by jewels and decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. The personality of Godhead the personality of Godhead means one who is full with all power, all energy, all opulences, all beauties, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Therefore, in the palaces of the Lord, there was nothing wanting for fulfilling all desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore, his desires are also unlimited, and the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as sarvakamam, or full with all desirable equipment. Om Ajnani Tamarandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Sapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantekam Bandeham Shri Goro Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagurirattam Sahagana Raganatam Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Behevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnamebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare So before I start speaking, giving class, I do want to say that very happy to be able to say something in front of this group of devotees. I'm not here every day, but I am listening regularly on the internet with the classes, and the classes in this community are actually quite extraordinary. Day after day after day are wonderful, wonderful discourses of various personalities giving very nice talks on the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, and I just hope that I don't bring down that standard. I hope I can contribute to the ongoing Bhagavatam discourse here at the manor. So in this verse, it's very nice. Krishna is there in Dwarka, and he's entering his palaces. 16,108 palaces, they're all being described as perfect. This narration, as Prabhupada explains, is also given in the 10th canto. There's a chapter there where Narada Muni enters the different palaces of Krishna in Dwarka. And it's described there how Narada Muni is observing the Lord in his various activities there in the palaces. So what's being described here, though, is that Krishna, he's, these palaces that he's entering, they're perfect. They're exquisite. Marble floors. Exquisite. We can just imagine, like, the most luxurious mansion you can just imagine. Of course, in those days, there was no electricity. They would have to have candles to illuminate, and it's described that they would position jewels in such a way that the light of the candles would then refract all over the room. So just as we have, like, candelabras, of course, here it's electrical candelabras. We can imagine the kind of opulence that was there with the various beautiful decorations. Here's described the velvet curtains, the silk curtains, the beautiful ornate gold embroidery. The beautiful gardens is also being described here. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. He's the Supreme Enjoyer. He's enjoying perfectly here in Dwarka with his many, many wives. So we, of course, also have these kind of desires. We're part and parcel of Krishna. And so it's only natural sometimes that we see that we would like to have our own palace. We would like to have our own apartment. Well, maybe the apartment's not good enough. We have to have a house. Maybe it's a row house, but maybe that's not good enough. We want to have a palace. We want to have a mansion with these kinds of ornamentations, this kind of opulence. So in one sense, that's natural because being part and parcel of Krishna, but as devotees of Krishna, we have to also understand that we need to live a life of simple living, high thinking also, that this kind of opulence is there for the Lord, and we're meant to serve the Lord and to serve the Lord's desire, and that way we derive a happiness and satisfaction. So Narada Muni, as described again in the 10th canto, he enters into these palaces where he sees Krishna is enjoying as a wealthy prince, very wealthy, wealthy. And he's observing Krishna. He's doing different activities while he's in these palatial buildings, 16,000. He is, in one building is described, he's playing chess. In another palace, he's playing with his children. In another palace, he's engaging in sporting activities. In some palaces, he's in the garden. He's maybe taking care of his elephants, horses, various paraphernalia. The point is, in each and every one of these palaces, Krishna is doing something different. And it's also described, actually, I should mention this, that we can think, okay, 16,108 palaces, that sounds like a lot, but actually it's described in Dwarka at this time was an incredibly opulent city. There were described to be 900,000 palaces altogether. So 16,108 palaces, in one sense, is not that many. And there's actually been some archaeological discoveries there close to the city of Dwarka, that this Dwarka city was said to have gone under the ocean after Krishna's departure. So there's actually some archaeological discoveries that validate that actually there was a very incredible city there in Dwarka to the extent that we can hardly even imagine. 900,000 palaces. So Krishna, he expands himself 16,108 times. But we should understand that this is different from the yogi expansions. A yogi can have mystic cities where they expand themselves, say, maybe 10 times. But it's described, those yogic expansions, it's like a TV. Every activity that the yogi is doing, he's doing, expanded himself 10 times, but it's the same activity, like a TV. But with Krishna, he's perfectly situated in his many, multiple expansions with his expansions of his wives also. So it's described in the Brahma Sangita. what's that verse? Anantarupam. I forget the beginning, but how's it described? In the Brahma Sangita, where it's described where Krishna has many, many expansions. What's the beginning of that verse? No, that's not it. I'm sorry. No. I should have written it down. My memory is not always so good. Advaitam achutam anantarupam. That's the verse I'm thinking of. Advaitam achutam anantarupam. So Krishna is described as Advaitam. He is the one, non-dual Lord. Advaitam achutam, meaning he's non-fallible. He cannot be diminished in any sense. And anantarupam, meaning anantarupam. That's what's being described here. Anantarupam. Advaitam achutam anadyam anantarupam ajam purusham navayovanam cha. That he's actually described as the oldest person. The beginning, Advaitam achutam anadyam anantarupam ajam purana purusham. He is the first original person. Ajam purusham Advaitam achutam anadyam anantarupam ajam purusham navayovanam cha. That he's the oldest person, and sometimes we see it's described or it's depicted anyway in the monotheistic traditions, the Judeo-Christian monotheistic traditions, that this conception of God as the original oldest person, well, they think of him as an old man. Therefore, Michelangelo in the 16th chapel in the Vatican has depicted this famous picture of God reaching out to Adam, and he's depicted as an old man, very kind of muscular, but he's old in his features, gray hair. Why is he an old man? Because, God is the oldest, the original person. But here in the Brahma Sangita, Advaitam achutam anantarupam ajam purana, Purusham navayom navanovayam cha, that he is actually an ever youthful person. Prabhupada explains how Krishna, he's always depicted as a young boy, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, maybe up to 22, but always in the full youth. So even though we know that he displayed his activities for 125 years, he never appeared to be older than, say, 20 years old. He's always, as part of his opulence is to always be in a ever youthful body, never growing old. Can you imagine seeing a picture of Krishna in an old body? We can't imagine it because it's never there. Krishna never grows old. Ajam Purana Purusham Navayo Vanamcha Vede Shudulabham Adulabham Atma Bhakto. That he is described there in the Brahma Sangita, that by reading about Krishna, in one sense we're reading about Krishna every day, we're studying the Bhagavatam, various shastras, Bhagavad Gita, and reading about Krishna, yes, that's good, but you cannot understand Krishna perfectly just by reading about Krishna. You have to actually have the mercy of a devotee. Vede shudulabham adulabham atma bhakto. And by actually having then the mercy of the devotee, and that's what we're doing all our activities in the Krishna consciousness movement are aimed at actually getting the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, getting the mercy of the devotees, and by thus doing that and studying the shastra, then all these things about Krishna can be ultimately realized. Krishna reveals himself. The Krishna consciousness process, bhakti yoga, is a process of revelation. Revelation. We can try to our best of our ability through practicing Krishna consciousness, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra to realize Krishna. This is what we're doing, the practices of sadhana bhakti. But ultimately, if Krishna chooses to reveal himself, then we can really understand who is Krishna. So this is how we understand Krishna. So the specific thing I want to focus in on this verse and purport is the understanding of Krishna and his many expansions, and how that is portrayed in our basic understanding of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Because Krishna is expanding himself, but we should also understand that Rukmini, or Lakshmi Devi, is also expanding herself. The original Adi Purusham, of course, is Radha and Krishna. But here in Dwarka, it's the mood is Lakshmi Narayan. It's Krishna as a princely, wealthy prince with his many wives. And the understanding is that Krishna is expanding in all his forms, and Lakshmi is expanding in all her forms. This is our understanding, that ultimately our philosophy is very mystical. It's very inconceivable. That's why Srila Jiva Goswami describes the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya as achincha bheda abheda tattva. Now, Lord Chaitanya didn't come up with that description. That actually came from Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas. Achincha bheda abheda tattva, which means inconceivably, simultaneously one and different. Sometimes devotees say, yes, simultaneously one and different, but if you leave off the achincha, you're leaving out the really essential understanding that this is inconceivable. And generally, this is also concept that is used to describe the distinction between Krishna and his many expansions. So there's Krishna and the various Vishnu expansions, Vishnu tattva, and then there's the Jiva tattva. And the analogy that's always used is the distinction between the sun and the sunshine. That now the sun is coming up, someone can say, well, the sun is coming into the room. But actually, the sun's not in the room. Sun is very far away. But it's the sunshine and the sun that's actually inconceivably simultaneously the same. So that's the analogy Prabhupada would always use. But this achincha bheda bheda tattva is a concept that we have to learn how to see actually every activity in Krishna consciousness, everything we're doing in the world, our interaction with the world, through, I sometimes use the description, through the lens covered with achincha bheda bheda tattva philosophies. It's like sometimes someone says, oh, I'm looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, meaning you're looking at the world in a very happy way, in a very favorable way. We, as devotees, need to look at the world and our activities in the world, our activities in Krishna consciousness, through lenses that have been tinted with this philosophy of achincha bheda bheda tattva. Then we can understand things actually much easier. And it's not easy. It's not easy because, well, to begin with, it's achincha. What does achincha mean? Inconceivable. So if it's inconceivable, why are we day after day trying to describe what is inconceivable? We try. We're not always very perfect at it. But this is the great literature of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the literatures of the Goswamis are ultimately aimed at giving some clarification of something that cannot even be conceived by our limited mundane minds. Another way I like to think of this word achincha is it's mystical. It's mystical. It's something that's beyond our ability to really fully understand. So this achincha bheda bheda tattva, it's there in everything we do. First and foremost, when we are focusing our devotion and our attention on Radha and Krishna, here, Radha Gokulananda, or on Sitaram, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Our understanding is that Krishna and Radharani are actually one and the same. Yet at the same time, they're different, simultaneously. Now, how can Radha and Krishna be one and the same and different simultaneously? This is something that we should all be meditating on. How does this work? How is Radha and Krishna one and the same? So here, just as Krishna, he's expanding himself into all these 16,108 forms. So Radharani, you could say, or here in Dwarka, it's mainly the form of Rukmini, or you could say Lakshmi Dev. She's also expanding herself into various forms. And that these are also to be understood, to be part of our philosophy of achincha bheda bheda tava, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Our philosophy is monotheism, but in a sense, it's also terminology being used to describe Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It's called polymorphic bimonotheism. Now it's a long word. I'll try and explain it. But polymorphic bimonotheism is actually the same thing as achincha bheda bheda tattva. So this term has actually been catching on. It actually was introduced about 8 years ago by one of my godbrothers. His name is Guruda in America. He is a scholar, actually, in comparative religion. He got his PhD degree from Harvard University. Harvard is the Oxford of universities in America. So he went to the most prestigious school. And by Krishna's arrangement, it wasn't his arrangement, but by Krishna's arrangement, he actually wrote his dissertation on something very, very confidential. Does anyone know what I'm referring to? Does anyone know who Garuda is? Maybe devotees don't know who Garuda is here. He comes here actually sometimes. He's actually helping establish some of the curriculum at the Avanti schools. But by Krishna's arrangement, Garuda actually wrote his PhD dissertation on the five chapters of Rasa Leela from the Bhagavatam. So he actually has become the world's authority in the academic world on not only Rasa Leela, but Radha Krishna theology. And so he has formulated his a theological formulation that is very accurately describes what is this achincha bheda bheda tattva. And that is polymorphic bimonotheism. Now let me work my way through that so you can understand this. Otherwise it'll just go right past you. Polymorphic. What is poly? Poly means many, morphic, many forms. So polymorphic means the same thing here, anantarupam, the many forms. Polymorphic. Just as there's many, many forms of Krishna. Here I'm looking at the avatar of Nrisimhadev or the Sadbhuj, where Krishna's playing his flute, Lord Chaitanya is there with his water pot, and Ramchandra is there all within one form. So polymorphic, many, many forms of the Supreme. And bimonotheism. Now, this gets a little crazy. How can it be bimonotheism? Because monotheism means one. Bi means two. So it's the same thing as achincha bheda bheda tattva. Bimonotheism means many expansions, polymorphic bimonotheisms of Radha and Krishna. By monotheism. Now, I've read some of the literatures in the College of the Vedic Studies here. What's it called? What's it called? The College of the Vedic Studies, right? Yeah. And they refer to Chaitanya Vaishnavism, the Hare Krishna movement, as is teaching basically monotheism. So maybe this can be looked into, because this term bimonotheism is now catching on within the academic world. Many academic scholars are agreeing with Garuda Prabhu. is a shameless promotion. This is his book. This book just recently became available at the Soho Temple, and I need to find out how I can get it available here. Dance of Divine Love, India's Classic Sacred Love Story, The Rasa Leela of Krishna, by Graham Schwag. That's his secular name, Professor Schwag. So Professor Schwag, or Garuda, my godbrother, is a very exalted devotee, actually. I don't know if he's ever going to hear this. He won't be like it if I'm saying this. But he is actually, within the Hare Krishna movement, the most qualified academic devotee that is a practicing academic. He came up with this formulation, polymorphic bimonotheism, as a means to theologically describe Chaitanya Vaishnavism. And many devotees are now catching on to this as a means to discuss this with the world, and certainly within the academic world it's catching on. So perhaps even with the College of Vedic Studies, they can, it's kind of like an update to create this understanding of bi-monotheism, just by adding that bi with a dash, bi-monotheism. That makes all the difference in the world. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Just as here, okay, we're looking at the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Gokulananda, but it's Radha Gokulananda. We're looking at Ramchandra, but it's Sitaram. And then, of course, Ramchandra's expansion is Lakshman. Well, who is Lakshman? Lakshman is Balaram. So Krishna, he has his immediate expansions. His immediate expansions are in his female consort and as Balaram. And then, of course, Hanumanji is there. Hanumanji is a little more complicated topic. Hanumanji is actually expansion of one of the 11 Rudras. But Hanuman, in that sense, is also an expansion of Krishna, if you consider that in terms of Shiva Tattva, that Shiva, the original Shiva, is also Vishnu Tattva, Sada Shiva. Anyway, that's a complex topic. I don't want to digress. But the understanding is there that there's many, many expansions of Krishna. These are avatar expansions. There's the Leela avatar expansions, the Guna avatars. There's the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatars here, we have this beautiful painting here, is describing in a very nice way the Purusha avatars. That from Balaram comes the first Chaturvyuha expansion, from Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and from Sankarshan becomes a second Chaturvyuha expansion. And from that Sankarshan comes the Mahavishnu, which is the source of all the unlimited universes. And from that Mahavishnu, then we have the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, which is the specific Vishnu form which expands into each and every universe. And we have, from that Vishnu form is expanded, the Shirodakshay Vishnu, which expands within the heart of all living entities, and not only the heart of all living entities, but within each and every single atom. So who can conceive how incredibly exalted and transcendental and expansive is Krishna? We can barely conceive of this one planet, Earth, which is revolving around the sun. And then the astronomers will tell us, well, this sun is simply one speck, one star within the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, where there's billions and billions of stars. And then with modern science now, they're looking out into the darkness of space, and they're realizing, oh, the Milky Way galaxy is simply one of many billions and billions of galaxies. And so this incredibly large universe. Krishna is pervading it in every way. Krishna is there. And we understand that this is only from the Bhagavatam. Of course, the material scientists, they'll never understand this. Of course, they're coming. The scientists are also coming to some level of understanding that there possibly are multiple universes. That's now part of their theorizing. But for the devotee, we have perfect knowledge, understanding that, yes, actually, there are multiple universes. This fits in perfectly with our understanding of the Bhagavatam, the many, many universes expanding from the body of Mahavishnu. This is the point, that Krishna is anantarupam. He's polymorphic. He's expanding in so many ways that we cannot even conceive of. And we cannot conceive very easily of this idea of achincha beta beta tafa, or bi monotheism. How is it that Radha and Krishna are one and the same? Now, this verse specifically is describing that, yes, 16,108 palaces, 16,108 expansions of Krishna, and 16,100 expansions of the wives of Krishna. This is actually what I'm trying to focus in on. This is actually the unique contribution of Lord Chaitanya in the history of Vedic philosophical thought. There's many different ideas in the umbrella of what is sometimes known as Hinduism. Of course, I don't like using that word, but sometimes we're lumped in as a category of Hinduism. There's many, many different ideas. But Lord Chaitanya, he basically took the monistic ideas established by Sankaracharya and the dualistic ideas established by Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, and he brought them together. He homogenized them. He synthesized them. That's what achincha beta beta tattva is. That's actually the highest conceptualization of Vedic philosophy that is available. That's why the Hare Krishna movement is so special. That's why we are endeavoring so hard to distribute Prabhupada's books, to distribute this philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because we know that it is the ultimate manifestation of Vedic philosophy. That Lord Chaitanya created this synthesis. In one sense, he took Sankaracharya and said, yes, there is that oneness, but what is that oneness? That oneness doesn't mean anything if it's separate from Krishna, and Radha and Krishna specifically. So when we think of our devotion to Radha and Krishna, another way of thinking of it is that we're devoted to Radha and Krishna, Radha Gokulananda, and we are devoted to their love exchange. That love exchange creates an energy. That love exchange actually can be understood to be the Brahman that Sankaracharya refers to. Just as in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Brahmanohi prasishtaham, that he is that source of the impersonal Brahman. So achincha beta beta tafa means that, yes, we're not denying that oneness, but we're understanding that oneness in relationship to Krishna, specifically in relationship to Radha and Krishna. So we're worshiping Radha and Krishna, and ultimately we're also worshiping that love exchange. Now, an analogy can be given in a mundane sense. Just like here at the manor, performing many, many marriages. Okay? And we can see sometimes in the newlywed couple, they're looking into each other's eyes, and there's like, oh, it's beautiful. You know they're in love. There's an energy that's experienced. That's a mundane sense. Okay, but the pure transcendental love of Radha and Krishna, they're producing an energy. So and this Brahman effulgence is not only emanating from Krishna's body, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, but also emanating from Radharani's body. And ultimately, that is what we're worshiping also. So this experience of Brahman, this oneness, is a byproduct of a devotee practicing Krishna consciousness. It's a byproduct. We're not endeavoring to, as the Mayavadis would say, merge into the Brahman, but this Brahman effulgence is automatically there as we worship Radha and Krishna. So there's so many things that can be said about this. This is another example I want to give. One of the most important deities in Vrindavan, I sometimes joke with the devotees. This is a deity that actually all devotees need to understand, have some relationship to, is the most important deity in Vrindavan, but actually is not an ISKCON deity. This is the deity of Radharaman. Within one form, you actually have Krishna and Radha and Chaitanya. One form. That's a whole other subject. I'm not going to, go off on a tangent about Radharaman and how he was a self-manifesting deity of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But this is very important to understand that within one deity, actually, Radharani is there also. You don't have a deity of Radharani, as we have here. That Radharani is understood to be within Radharaman. So inconceivably simultaneously one and different. So when they're worshipping Radharaman, yes, they're also worshipping Radharani, even though she's not there in a figurative way. So I don't have much time left, but I wanted to discuss very briefly how, in one sense, we should all be appreciating how it is that this female aspect of Krishna manifests practically within the lives of the devotees. How does she manifest practically? Now, we not understand she's there in the Maha Mantra, in the vocative term of Hare. Hare is referring to Radharani. So Hare Krishna is Radha and Krishna. Hare Rama is actually Sita Ram. So that Hare is actually there. But in another sense also, there's many expansions of this female aspect. Every morning after Mangal Arati, the devotees, they gather and under the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, we worship Tulsi Maharani. So Tulsi Maharani is a direct expansion of Vrinda Devi, who's an expansion of Radharani in the spiritual world. And there, that focus of devotion is directly on that feminine consort, Tulsi Maharani. And another way of understanding how this female consort has actually entered into the Hare Krishna movement, the very first deities that came into ISKCON that were established by Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco are Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. Now, at the Soho Temple, you have very similar deities carved by Shyamasundar Prabhu. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. So who is Subhadra? Has anyone really understood who is Subhadra? We understand Subhadra is the sister of Krishna, the sister of Jagannath, the sister of Balaram. But specifically, Subhadra, as being the sister of Krishna, is actually Durga. But we don't worship Subhadra as Durga. We worship her as Yogamaya. As Durga, that concept is alien, actually, to a devotee's mind. But Durga, Yogamaya, is the same personality. It's actually the same personality. And as Yogamaya, this is serving the same function as Radharani. Radharani expands herself as Yogamaya. So in many ways, we have to be able to see how not only Krishna is expanding, but how Radharani is expanding for our own benefit so that we can actually apply this Achincha Beta Beta Tattva philosophy into our own lives so that we can preach the accuracy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. It's as if we're ever preaching to the to scholars as this polymorphic bi-monotheism, not simply monotheism, bi-monotheism, and that this is the unique contribution of Mahaprabhu, that this understanding of Achincha Beta Beta Tattva is quite extraordinary. if we can actually develop our understanding philosophically and then relate to all of our activities in the Krishna consciousness movement as relating to Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So I know I should stop here. I have some more things to say to try and clarify, but if I haven't confused everyone enough already, maybe someone has some questions, I can try and clarify some of these ideas and concepts and points of discussion.